It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back. I guess it's not really welcome back. It's, hey, it's good to have you here. Oh, man. You know what? Today on the show, we have Jackie Bechara, and she was introduced to us by Larry Shaliga, who's one of our regular contributors, and Larry's also here as well. But I wanted to invite Jackie back because there is so much out there about coaching or executive coaching or mentoring, and so I thought it'd be great to bring her in and talk about the do's and don'ts, the myths versus the, you know, separate the fact from the fiction. Yeah, that's it. And so I'm excited to have her on the show. We also have Michael Grunewald on the show, and he is the senior writer for Political Magazine and the author of The New Deal, The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era. So it's interesting to get his take on it. Anyway, so glad that you're here. Always happy that you guys help us out with not only good show topics, but show guests as well. It means a lot that you follow us on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram. Anyway, so let's kind of dive into this. Let's get this party started with my first guest, Jackie Bechara, executive coach with Results Oriented Coaching. Jackie, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. This means I'm the opening act.
You're the it. Everything hinges on you now, and so this will be fun. And so, all right, so let's talk about this because really, you know, you've worked you work with the Hay Group, an international human resource consultancy. Let me rephrase that. The Hay Group, an international human resource consultancy, has found that 25% to 40% of Fortune 500 companies use executive coaches. Do you agree with that? Is that a statistic that rings true to you?
It's actually growing. What we know from research is that coaching has become a $1 billion industry and just continues to grow. It really got its start, executive coaching anyway, around the 80s, dropped off a little bit, and now it's really taken off like wildfire. There have been all kinds of studies done. There was an article in the Harvard Business Review about a year ago that found that $1 billion spent on executive coaching.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So I want to talk about this. Is coaching, when somebody hears that they're getting coached, you know, sometimes people will put them in a box that this person may be unmotivated or is a problem individual or maybe is a low achiever. Do you, you know, talk about that. Do you find this to be true or do you find it to be the opposite, that go-getters probably do most of the hiring?
Actually, Bert, when executive coaching first got its start, it was more focused on developmental issues, people that were having, whether it was trouble with strategic thinking or developing relationships, or they were managers that were having trouble leading. Now, a growing number of organizations are using coaching as a strategic part of their plan to develop their leaders. So now what we're seeing are high performers, top performers, even CEOs. There was a study out of Stanford that was in 2013 that reported that CEOs are now asking for coaching because of how valuable it is to have someone to bounce ideas off of. I mean, you know the old saying, you know, it's lonely at the top. You know, when you're in leadership positions, there aren't a lot of people to talk through your ideas and things that you're just sort of thinking through or getting to know your blind spots or really examining your successes and your failures to see how do you grow on your successes and how do you mitigate the elements that have contributed to a project that maybe didn't go as well as you hoped. And so it's actually something that we're seeing now. Many high performers are asking for coaching and are being offered coaching as a part of leadership strategy.
Yes, and I think that what's also interesting, too, is you said it's lonely at the top. I think when you're at the top, you're expected to know everything. You're expected to have this bulletproof, bulletproof stamina, you know, confidence.
Yep.
You know, you're the guy who everybody goes to for the answers.
You know, I always say when I'm doing coaching or when I'm speaking, we never get above the human dynamic. It doesn't matter how far you progress in an organization, how much technology or strategy you have, you are never going to outgrow being human. And as humans, we all have blind spots. A mentor of mine a number of years ago, and I love this illustration, Bert, so I'm gonna share it with you and your listeners. She held up her hand, and she said to me, "Tell me what you see." And I said, I see your hand, I see your palm, I see the lines in your palm. She said, "Now I'm going to tell you what I see. I also see a hand, but I see knuckles and I see fingernails." And essentially she was saying, we're both going to look at the same thing, and there are going to be things you see I don't and things I see that you don't. And if we're looking at it together and collaborating, then we're going to see more of the picture than either one of us would on our own. And that's really what coaching helps with, because even in leadership positions, we have blind spots. We have things we don't see.
Yes.
We have a way that we think that is a preferred way of thinking, maybe, and maybe we have to utilize a way that's not so comfortable. I was coaching somebody today who's in a pretty high position in the government, and they said, "Well, you know, my work style is really to just take care of problems, and when things come my way, I don't even think to delegate." And I said, "Well, my question to you would be, do you do that because that's more in your comfort zone and it's become a habit? Or is it really a work style that you strategically thought about and developed?" And he was really, you know, he's like, "Wow, I hadn't thought of it that way." And that's what coaching provides, is just sometimes a different perspective. Sometimes we hold up a mirror to help you see deeper inside yourself, and sometimes a window where you look out at your environment and am I utilizing my sphere of influence in the best way that I can, and what ways can I build those relationships?
Absolutely. So I'm going to bring on Larry Shaliga, and Larry is one of our regular contributors, and he has worked firsthand with Jackie. Larry Shaliga, founder and president of Results Oriented Coaching and Consulting. He has over four decades of management and consulting experience, and as a manager, he has a remarkable career progressing from first-line production supervisor to CEO. This guy has run multiple organizations. He's worked with some very big companies. Most recently helped a company grow from a small, privately-owned $10 million company to $150 million worldwide organization. Larry Shaliga, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, Bert. It's good to be back again. Thank you.
Absolutely. And you know what? And so I want to get your thoughts on this, because you hired an executive coach because you had plateaued. You were kind of getting stale, and so I want you to talk about your mindset or, you know, when you decided to hire an executive coach.
Well, Bert, to be more accurate, I didn't plateau. I was into a nosedive. I was so frustrated, couldn't get anything done right, and was losing ground. Tried a whole bunch of things, decided to hire a coach, and Jackie was referred to me. And Jackie, we've been together now, what, about 3 years?
Yeah, it has been about 3 years.
and going strong. So she helped me identify a lot of the things that I didn't see. You know, people used to refer to me as the most hated man in the company. And after a while, you know, working with Jackie, these same people started come to me and involving me in the problems that they had. We developed a new level of respect, a new level of trust. There's a sense of loyalty. It's broken down into, the barriers have been broken down, and they now seek me out. We're forming groups where the people are really getting engaged in the business. They're coming up with opportunities that personally, by myself, I never would have thought of. And many of those people now are working with Jackie.
I did want to clarify one thing if I could, Bert, which is
sure.
Larry and I don't work together now as coach and client, now as colleagues. So,
oh, interesting.
And I think
yes.
Yeah, and I think that's important because coaching is not intended to be, you know, a long-term, years-on-end engagement. I always say I'm really trying to work myself out of the job. My hope is to help you, to collaborate with you, to build whatever strengths you have, and to help you put together those strategies for success that you can then develop those as you go on. And I think that's really an important point because I get asked that question quite frequently is, you know, is this something where it's like therapy where you're doing it for a prolonged period of time? Or so this is meant to be for a set amount, and you have goals related to the organization as well as personal goals. So I wanted to bring that into the conversation.
Sure, sure. I like that. All right. So let me ask you this,
please.
Larry. I want to talk about this, ask you, Larry,
sure.
about this. So now when you have somebody let me back up before I ask you that question. Before you hired Jackie as an executive coach, did you have a different opinion of what executive coaching was, or did you not ever hear about it? What was your thoughts prior to getting your own executive coach?
You know, I had heard about executive coaching. I had talked to people about it. There was a certain defensiveness there. I think I had that corporate office, how are they going to help me? They don't have any experience type of attitude. And I pushed it off for a long time. It was through sheer desperation. I had to try something new. And, you know, the first interview where I was interviewing her to see whether we wanted to work together, and she was doing the same thing with me. Because if you don't fit, it's not going to work. And it quickly became obvious that, you know, we would talk about things, and then she would ask me a question that would sit me back, and I couldn't even answer it. I had to sit there and really dig deep to find the answer. There was a lot of, I'll say that I built a facade to protect myself against things
sure.
that I really wasn't aware of. And she helped me break that facade.
And I think that facade, we all have that facade. Some people call it mask, or, you know, you have multiple egos, whatever you call it. We all have that barrier that we put up that, you know, and it changes. You know, we have one facade for our work environment, another facade at home, and maybe another facade when we're around, you know, our friends, you know, when we're out with the guys or the girls. Okay, so let me ask you, Jackie, let me ask you this. What should someone be looking for when they're considering getting an executive coach?
That's a great question, Bert. One of the challenges in executive coaching is there is no universal set of standards. And we in the field of executive coaching are, you know, commenting on it, working on it. But one thing that I think is very important is that the coach has coach-specific training in an approved program such as the International Coaching Federation. Because what happens a lot of times is people who have had positions in leadership will sometimes say, okay, well, I can coach someone because I've been a leader. But the skills
right.
around coaching are different. And so they're very specific. So having working with someone that has had coach-specific training in an accredited a body like the International Coaching Federation, I think is really important. I think somebody who works from a solid methodology, I always say to people, find out what their philosophy on coaching is. And you want somebody who's going to empower you. Because what we know is you're the expert on you. What I can do is to help you bring out the answers that are inside of you. And one of the things that I often will comment on, and I don't, when I read about articles about what should you look for in a coach, one of the things I don't read about, but I'm a firm believer in, is someone who has had coaching themselves. Someone who's worked on their own blind spot. And that
right.
was one of the things that I shared with Larry, is I myself had gone through transformational change. I ran into very similar issues that Larry talked about, where I couldn't understand why I wasn't connecting with colleagues and people in the workspace in the way that I wanted to, and thought what I, you know, the intent I had wasn't having the impact I wanted. And so not only did I learn about it through, I went through an accreditation program and I got certified, so I learned about it from an education stance, but I also understand transformational change from a very personal level. And I think Larry can speak to this, but he and I talked about what a difference that made, because he felt understood, both
right.
when he was talking about challenges he was having and in the change process. So when you're looking for a coach, I would ask, what are you doing to address your own blind spots so that it doesn't interfere in the coaching that you're doing with your client?
So, Larry, why don't you talk about this? You know, what would you tell another executive, C-suite, business owner? What should they look for when they're considering getting involved with an executive coach?
Well, I think you have to have a clear idea of what it is you're looking for in terms of what type of issue does the individual want to work on. Are they even clear what they want to work on? I think the biggest thing is on their side, and I think Jackie will agree, that the people who are anxious and looking for a change, looking for something that they can change to help them move forward, are more acceptable to the coaching methods. If you're not acceptable, there's too much time spent defending yourself, hiding from yourself. And the ones we have most success with are the ones that are really looking for an opportunity to change something within themselves so that they can improve their work, their personal relationships, just the way they feel about themselves.
Right. You know what?
Can I add one more thing as well?
Sure.
The last point I'll make is the element that is unique about executive coaching from other types of coaching is that there are two clients. There's the organization that's hiring you, as well as the person that you're working with. And what I always say is, I believe in knowing well-validated, reliable models and theories and tools, because even though coaching is often about the process of developing those relationships, as an executive coach, I do believe that you need to have an underlying knowledge of business principles, concepts, and practices, so that you can tie the goals in to the organizational goals as well. And I think that's an important aspect of executive coaching that's distinctive from other forms of coaching, life coaching or health coaching, for instance.
Yeah. No, and that's a very interesting distinction, too, because you're right. You have two clients. You're trying to, you know, like you said, you have the organization and then you have the individual. Larry, so after you got involved with Jackie and you noticed a difference, I think you told me you noticed a difference pretty quickly. Is executive coaching now a very, a common strategy in your tool bag? Is that something that you go to? That you would refer or talk to another executive about?
Yes, it is, Bert. But not with everybody.
Right.
I look at what the person themselves, what they're struggling with, what the opportunities for. It's not always the person that's struggling. Sometimes they're ripe for moving and advancing, and they just need a little bit of a nudge, a little bit more clarity. So I do seek out people that have that ambition, that drive, that openness, the potential. And so far, we've been very, very successful with the selection of people that we've had. Now, I'm not saying that everybody does well. There are a few people that, after one or two sessions, just say, this isn't for me, and they don't want to do it. But there are others that come back and say, I know that the agreed period is over. Can we continue?
Right.
So I think it's very important to recognize that it doesn't fit for everybody, but for the people that grab it, I have seen tremendous improvements, and their careers are advancing as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, when somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, you know, Larry, this is just not for me," do they give you a reason? I mean, do you think it's because they're afraid? Larry, you answer then, and then Jackie, when he's done, I want to get your opinion.
Okay.
Well, a lot of it, Bert, is personal. As a manager, I never ask them exactly what they're working on with the coach. That's between them and the coach, and that's important to keep that barrier there because it's endangering them if it comes out. You know, it gives them the freedom to talk about the things that are really on their mind. I will ask, is it a match with the coach? Do I need to find another coach? Most of the time, the ones that I'm experienced with say, no, it's just not for them, and I just let it go. I don't hold it against them in their position at work, but I do think that in some cases it really would have helped if they had continued. Jackie, is that I think the big key is you can't dive into what they're working on. That's got to be held sacred.
Well, and I agree with that, and I like that. But, you know, because sometimes as humans, sometimes we, you know, what you said, Larry, I think, is very universal, where you have somebody who's poking at your facade, who's making you rethink things, and that can be uncomfortable. Change can be uncomfortable. When people are asking questions and you don't have the answer, that can be uncomfortable. Jackie, your thoughts?
So I think a couple of things. One, I think there has to be an understanding of what coaching is and how it differs from, say, consulting. As a consultant, I go in as a subject matter expert, and I'm expected to come back with interventions or recommendations, where in coaching, it's more on process and helping the client come up with their own answers. So that is one thing. It's sometimes there's a confusion between what is coaching, and that I'm not there to give you the answers as much as to help you come up with the answers that are already inside of you, or how do you go about seeking what those answers are. So that's one. The other thing is I'm actually doing research now on the developmental readiness of executives for executive coaching, and how can you tell who's ready and who's not. So it's interesting you asked this question because that's right around the area that I'm researching. But I think or what you hit on as opponent as well is, if someone is looking for others, whether they're, you know, for the reason this isn't happening is because of somebody else, I want somebody else to take ownership, take charge, then coaching gets to be problematic, because coaching is really about empowerment. And I'm a believer that while I can't control another person, I always can contribute to the relationship. I always have a contribution to whether the relationship is working or isn't working, or isn't working as well as I might want it to. And so looking at those parts of myself, sometimes we're ready, sometimes we're not ready, and sometimes we don't have the energy for it. That people, you know, as I say, we are in a 24/7 environment right now where technological advances have created an environment that's never silent, and we're always on demand. So people move into a reactive mode of being. And I hear that sometimes is, you know, I don't even have time to stop. What's unfortunate about that is what I have found is, if you can create that time, then oftentimes we find there's much more time we have in the day than we sometimes realize.
Right, right. It seems to me, though, and Larry, I've muted Larry because we were getting some feedback, but I want Larry's opinion on this as well. So, but I'm going to have you answer this first, Jackie, and then we'll go to Larry. And that is, it's okay. Like anything else. I mean, you and I all have the same 24-hour period. It's just like, you know, people who say, hey, I don't have time to work out. I don't have time to, you know, whatever, go to you know, whatever my preferred religious service is or whatever. I mean, bottom line is we all have the time. The question is whether we have the commitment or whether we have it as a priority, right? So there are people who get up at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure that they get their gym time in. And then there's some people who get up at the same 4 or 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning and they're already working on whatever project is consuming them. So isn't it a matter of priority?
No, I mean, it can be for some people, but I think more times than not, it's a mindset. What happened with some of the people that I've coached from Larry's team, and I feel comfortable sharing this because everyone shared it in an open meeting, is that with some people, everything was a priority. And I say, if everything is a priority, then nothing is a priority. So
right.
Sometimes it's a mindset about how am I interpreting what's happening in the day, and how am I valuing the taking care of self. And one of the people that I was coaching said, you know, I didn't even include myself in the equation, and so I didn't even realize that. So you can say it's a priority, but sometimes, again, I go back to mindsets and blind spots. So I had him track for a week. Every day he was to track when he was interrupted, what after at the end of the day, how much of a priority were the different interruptions. And he was blown away by how many of the interruptions could have actually waited, but he was in such a habit of being in a reactive mode that he just kept reacting and never really got to some of the strategic things he wanted to get to. So it could be I'm sure with some people it is, but I find far more than not, it's mindsets and blind spots.
Larry, your thoughts?
I agree with what Jackie said, but I'd also like to add that in a lot of cases we run into, and I did it myself, I don't have time to show somebody else how to do these things. I have to do them myself, and I can do them better than they can, so it makes more sense for me to do it. Therefore, I continue to take on more and more of the workload, and I had to learn to stop and allow the people to get involved and actually share the workload and reduce some of the pressure. And suddenly I found out that they were more than anxious and more than willing to jump in and take more responsibility, which freed up my time. So, yeah, it was priorities, but it was also trusting the other people to be able to do the job and respecting the fact that they're just as smart as I am. I don't own we don't own just because we put on a tie doesn't make us any smarter.
Right, right. Well, you know what? It's interesting you should say that because I have said for many years that unfortunately here in America anyway, and I think in most cultures, if I was to walk into somebody's office or somebody's store and I'm wearing a suit and tie, I can start ordering people around and very few people would resist. You know, so there is this what do you want to call it? This power that we give to people who are wearing a title or a, you know, in this case a tie is the example. But you know, as the CEO, I'm going to think, well, Larry knows it all or whatever. And sometimes it's like you said, it's difficult to relinquish that or to delegate that. And the reality is that somebody may not do it as good as you. But the question is, does it need to be done as well as you're doing it?
Well,
can
also,
that person,
if you don't...
I was going to say, can that person do it maybe not as well as you, but learn to get better? Go ahead.
I think that's the key, is if you give them the chance, they may not do it perfect the first time, but each time they do it, they'll get better. So we have to give them a chance to develop.
But I think, too, and let me jump in just one second. The other, I think, important point here is, are you trying to develop a team or just get the single project done? And so many people lean by habit into the project and at the expense of how do you develop your team so that long term you can be more productive, more effective, more satisfied. And I think there's a distinction between getting this one thing done and am I building my team?
I'd like to add
to
that as well.
Go ahead.
As we move up through the ranks, oftentimes we're promoted because of our individual contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get into tighter spots and the pressure turns up, we tend to fall back on the things that got us where we are. So you know, what people don't realize is that as you move up in the organization, people really don't care what you get done. They care what you and your team get done. It's the
right.
result of the whole, not the individual. But as the pressure turns up and we start to feel the heat, we revert back to those things that were successful for us in the beginning, which can actually lead to our demise now.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, Jackie and Larry, we're out of time. I want to say thank you to Jackie Bashara for stopping by and sharing the facts and fiction of executive coaching. And then Larry Shaliga, who took time out to share his side of his experience with executive coaching. Both of you guys, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Bert.
Thanks, Bert. Bye-bye.
Good stuff.
Bye now.
You bet. Good stuff there from both Jackie Bashara and Larry Shaliga. It's, you know, I wanted to bring these guys on and talk about their experiences because we hear all these different things about coaching. But what was so cool about this conversation is that you got to hear it from not only the executive coach, but you also got to hear it from a client. You got to hear it from somebody who experienced it. And you could hear that he had some doubts. He had some reservations, some fears that we all do, right? As Larry said, you know, when somebody starts peeling away our facade and you start being hit with questions you don't know the answers to, sometimes we come up face-to-face with some big fears. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.